We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Good morning. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I don't know what that accent was. That was weird. I'm sorry. I am horrified right now, embarrassed, and I'm not easily embarrassed. If I was easily embarrassed, this would be a tough life, let me tell you that. But I am horrified right now because I'm looking down at my shirt and I'm just leaving. I am recording this like as I'm leaving the Eastman Museum. I just finished interviewing Jared. Like, the end of the interview happened probably 4 minutes ago. I get in my car, I look down at my shirt, and I realize I have these giant coffee stains on my shirt. Ugh. And it happened early this morning. Like, I had a couple important meetings today. I, you know, dressed somewhat nice for work today. Nothing crazy, but nice for me. And had this nice shirt on. And then, of course, on my way to work this morning, boom, I hit a bump. Coffee spills all over down the front of my shirt. I live the whole day with spots on my shirt. But to be honest with you, not easily embarrassed, as I said. I didn't scramble to, like, go get a new shirt. I'm the kind of person who I can live with just kind of, as long as it's out in the open, I'm fine. I'll just tell you. I'll just be like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I spilled coffee this morning. Please forgive my sloppiness, right? And then, like, life is fine. And I kind of did that. Like, throughout the people I had to see today, I was like, oh, hey, good to see you. By the way, ugh, I'm such a klutz. I spilled coffee. I'm sorry. But I realized I never said that to Jared. I just spent an hour with Jared, and I never addressed the coffee. So he's probably looking at the coffee stains for an hour going, who is this slob? You know, and also, you're going to hear, because this is a bit of a surprise, but Danielle Ramo of Brainery fame, now head of marketing and PR for the Eastman Museum, is actually the first 5 minutes of this interview. Surprise guest. She's the one that hooked me up with Jared to do the podcast, but she also probably sat there and stared at the coffee stains and went, who is this slob? Not easily embarrassed, currently horrified. Oh, man. Okay. Well, listen, I appreciate you. I love you. I can't thank you enough for listening to this podcast. It is the thrill of my week to get to do this. We were talking, Jared and I, kind of off the air just now about... I was talking to Danielle about this, about just kind of like, it scratches the itch. You know, it's like, take the boy out of radio, can't take the radio out of the boy. That is how I feel. I am asked all the time if I miss radio, and I always surprise people when I look at them and I say, yes, I do. Because I think they're expecting me to go, no, I don't miss it. I miss it every single day. Do I regret leaving? That's where I say, hell no. I don't regret leaving, of course. But, man, do I miss it. And this podcast allows me to scratch that itch. And I just appreciate you for being along for the ride. So without further ado, let me get to it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Jared Valentine, proprietor of Open Face, available at the Eastman Museum, where, no, you do not have to be attending the museum to go. You can just walk in and eat like any other restaurant. Just tell them you're there for the restaurant. You'll walk in. There's an admissions ticket. There's like a ticket desk right as soon as you walk into the Eastman. All you have to do is say, I'm just here to eat at Open Face. And they say, oh, yeah, right around the corner. Perfect. Easy. Nice. So Jared Valentine. But before Jared, I've got about 5 minutes with Danielle Ramo. It's a back-to-back double whammy, baby. Enjoy. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
All right, curveball right off the bat. They clicked on something that said his name, but instead you're here.
Surprise.
Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Danielle Ramo. I'm the communications manager for George Eastman Museum.
And?
And the owner of Rochester Brandon.
Ah, that's the Danielle I know. I remember. I was so, you know, I'm always like, I'm an entrepreneur fan. And yeah. I remember when you and I believe at the time had a partner, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
But you guys came in and you had this idea and you were in the building. What am I blanking on?
Village Gate.
Village Gate.
Yeah.
You were in the Village Gate and you had this idea, mm-hmm, and it's still freaking going.
It's still going.
How awesome is that?
Thanks. Yeah. It's
How
pretty
are you doing?
Awesome. It's good. Yeah. It's going well. We're still doing classes. We partner with 15 venues all around Rochester.
Yeah.
To host our classes, and we do about 40 classes a month. So lots of stuff to do.
This is the entrepreneur question, and this gives you a chance to study too, Jared. Ready? Give me two things that are going great,
uh-huh,
and one thing keeping you up at night. About the Brainery, not about Eastman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So the thing that keeps me up at night, because
people
that's
always
on
jump
my
to
mind
that
all the time, right?
Yeah.
Right? We should start with the positive, but I'm going to go with that to end on a positive note. The thing that keeps me up at night is just never having enough time for all of the ideas and the things that you want to do. There just isn't. So
yeah,
you have to like really focus on what is going to be the most effective, which is sometimes a bummer because then you have all these great ideas that just sit there forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
So that's the thing that keeps me up. And then the positive things is we've really restructured over the past couple of years. COVID was very difficult for a lot of businesses. The way people want to interact, I find, has changed the things that they want to do. So we've actually pared down the number of classes that we have every month. We used to have 60 to 80. Now we have around 40 to 50. And classes are full again, mm-hmm, which is great. So it's actually been a benefit to scale back. And that's been really good because teachers know their classes aren't going to get canceled. People know they can book a class for their friends, family, a birthday party, anything like that. You know, like coming to a public class, they can always book a private class. They know that won't get canceled. But, you know, to come as a group and they know their class isn't going to get canceled based on low registration. So that was a real hurdle for us over the past couple of years, and that's changed.
What was it like for you to do, because was that the idea behind it was, hey, if I schedule 80, some are not going to sell. If I schedule 40, they'll sell out. And how hard was that to like some stuff to hit the cutting room floor? Like that had to be hard.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, at a certain point we were really scaling up based on demand.
Mm.
And I would say that in like 2019 is when things were really starting to skyrocket in terms of people really wanting to go out and take classes. And then we had this really big halt in 2020, which really just changed the way that people were wanting to participate with others in person and otherwise. And so that kind of is what changed things for us. And when our lease was up in April of 2023, at this point in our physical location, at that point, I kind of had to decide, you know, what are we going to do with this space? And so I thought, all right, well, we've restructured a few times already because we had to. Let's restructure again. And so at that point is when I decided to not have our own venue, to partner with other venues, to fill their spaces, which were also now being underutilized, other venues in Rochester, and then scale back a bit on our classes and, you know, still host classes, but at their venues. And that's, mm-hmm, so it's always been driven. Every decision I've kind of made has been driven by what people have wanted.
This is why you've been around for so long, and why you've been so successful, is because you're adapting, you're pivoting. I mean, speaking of pivoting, when we talked to Jared,
too, right?
Resilience, absolutely. But we're sort of like, we're sitting in a pivot right now in Jared's place, right? And you just described, like, you see where it's going and you try to get in front of it. A lot of people, maybe they just kind of rest on, well, we've always done it this way, so. And like, sometimes that, you know, bites you in the ass. But
it's tough. It's sometimes not the idea that you had for your business, and mm-hmm, it's your business. So you're like, this is mine. I'm going to do what I want. But at the end of the day, at least for me, I have to think about, well, I'm doing this for other businesses. I'm doing this so other businesses can get the word out about their business. I'm doing this so there's a fun, you know, option for people to do in Rochester, something every single night that's not maybe the same old thing that they instantly think of doing. And so if I'm doing it for them, then I have to be offering what they want. Otherwise, there's no point.
Yeah.
So
last question before we this is the interview before the interview. last question before we get to the interview. And the day job now, is it the Eastman?
Yes.
Eastman Museum, you get to promote. I mean, George Eastman put Rochester on the map. Like, mm-hmm, how cool is it that, and this is his actual house? Is
yeah.
that right?
And I'm such a
weird,
yeah.
Like, they would work here.
Yes. I'm such a old house nerd. Like, that's the first thing I do when I go somewhere. I'm like, what old houses can I tour? And I just straight have my office in the mansion. Like, what? I'm going to work here forever if they let me. It's so cool.
Well, Danielle, thank you so much.
Thanks
for taking 5 minutes, and thanks for hooking me up with Jared here.
Thanks, Jared, for letting me interject here.
Thank you, Danielle. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Mr. Valentine.
Hello, sir.
Oh, bro, it is so good to meet you. Thank you for being patient for the last few minutes.
Yeah, no. No,
she's like, to me, she's a celebrity.
Oh, my gosh, for sure. Yeah, she's been, I mean, ever since she got on board here, it's been amazing.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff that she's been helping us do here at Open Face, and just, like, even making connections like this for me.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic.
Where are you at? Where are you, like, born and raised? Where are you from?
Ohio.
What? Where in Ohio?
So, out, very small town, Gettysburg, Ohio.
Okay, all right.
Population 500.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm originally from there. Then we ended up in Iowa for a little bit, and then I ended up here. And I weirdly ended up here because my dad came here to work for Kodak.
Full circle, perfect story.
There's a picture of me when we came up here. We used to come up here in the summertime. There's a picture of me out front in the mansion when I'm, like, you know, 10 years old.
Yeah.
So it is kind of like a weird full circle thing.
Just so you know why my face lit up, I'm also from Ohio. I'm from Ashtabula County, Northeast Ohio, Conneaut, Ohio.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Nice.
Small town. Not as small, not 500 people, but small town, like, on your way. If you've ever driven to go visit Gettysburg, you probably went through.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it on the sign.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so you end up in Rochester.
Yep.
And is this where you went to high school then?
It is. So I started basically I got here eighth grade, so my high school career was here, and I wasn't much for going off to college, so I actually I went to three colleges here in town. I went to, as we do, Nazareth for a little bit. I went to MCC, and then I ended up at RIT.
Well, if I came to you on your last day of high school and I said, Jared, what are you going to be when you grow up? What's the answer?
Oh, man. Gosh. Well, I thought I was going to be an actor. My class ring, I had the, you know, happy sad face thing. I'm sure there's a real name for that, but I'm not a real actor, so I don't know what the name is.
I don't know what it is either, but I know what you're talking
about. So I I kind of got into that last year in
theater kid?
Yeah. You know, but it was hard for you when you move around a lot, right? I didn't have those kind of, like, connections in school. So it was kind of, and those are tight-knit groups.
Yeah.
So I did actually try to get into acting, and I did auditions at colleges, but it just didn't feel right anymore. So
how's the thickness of your skin when you're doing auditions?
It is terribly thin.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And so auditions
are
hard.
Yeah, it's hard. It was brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you deal with, not to skip ahead, but I mean, you're in the restaurant business, right? Like, it's a competitive business. There's a million restaurants.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do you still, like, every time anybody, because I do bottled sauce,
and
I go to Wegmans, and every time I see a bottle of sauce that isn't ours, it's a loss.
Yeah.
It's an L. You know what I mean? Like,
I cry every night.
Does the thin?
Yeah, every night. Sometimes during the day.
Sometimes in the back.
And we don't have a walk-in where typically you would go to cry, so it's very embarrassing.
All right. That's good. Okay, so you go to all these three different schools, and even throughout college, I mean, is it always going to be acting, or at some point do you go, okay, I have a new idea?
Nope, I had a new idea. I, you know, kind of felt that I had, you know, a little bit of creative energy, and I actually, my associates at MCC was in interior design. I can't even tell you how I ended up there, but I did.
Yeah.
I think I was, I can tell. Yeah. Theater took me to set design. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I realized it wasn't on the stage, behind the stage.
Uh-huh.
And then people were like, maybe more interior work. But then I did that for a little bit. And I actually did a couple restaurants and bars here in town, besides my own. And then I realized, again, that wasn't for me. And so I got to furniture design.
So, oh, I love this. You have such a good journey.
Oh, my God.
But you said you worked on a couple restaurants. So were you an entrepreneur at that point?
What kind of happened is once Open Face started, people would come in and they loved the space. Mm-hmm. And I was doing all the design work for Open Face. So the interior and all of the graphic. So I was still working. I had, like, a side gig. I've always had side gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was, you know, a couple developers here in town that reached out to me and was like, I'm putting together this bar, restaurant, would you be interested in helping me out? And so I kind of pick up jobs like that.
So you keep referencing, it sounds to me like Open Face opened pretty quickly after college then, or?
Shortly. There's, gosh, I'm trying to think when I left RIT, but yeah, it was like maybe 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
I did go off. I worked at an ad design agency, right down on South Goodman, did that for a little bit. And then I realized at that point I wanted to have my own business. And that was the part. OpenFace, that lease was signed to be a art gallery in the front and a design studio in the back.
Really?
That's how the lease was signed.
What was in there before you? Was it a restaurant or not?
So, Dick Poole, who owned that building at the time, he had an antique shop there where Solera Wine Bar was. Mm-hmm. It's something place new. I forget what the name is now, so I apologize for that. But he was using that as a storage unit for his antiques.
Okay. And so you had to outfit that joint as a restaurant then.
Yeah, big mistake,
right?
A lot
of money in there.
Yeah. Never put in a commercial kitchen, even when it's small.
Yeah.
Never do it.
That is expensive. That's tough. I mean, but you know what that's showing already is risk tolerance.
Correct.
Which is a huge entrepreneur thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you, as you're building out OpenFace, you go into this place that needs to be outfitted as a restaurant.
Yeah.
Are you crapping your pants a little, or are you like, I got this. This is going to be great.
You know, I think like I said, after we pivoted away from the art gallery, it felt right for the South Wedge at the time because there just was not a lot of food places over there. Mm-hmm. And then it became pretty exciting, right? The problem was we took a whole year I signed the paper and then I waited. I paid rent for a whole year.
Oh, man.
Terrible. So yeah, if you're an entrepreneur and you're listening to this, do not ever do this. We dilly-dallied and we would work in this, stripping brick with dental picks, right? Because I didn't want the brick to be painted. And like we designed everything and made everything, which is all great. It's the fit and finish there was perfection, right? And that's what made OpenFace at that location. And we would go over happy hour at Lux, take a break, right? Oh, and let's go back and then finish some painting. But yeah, it was a year of...
Can we peel back the onion on that a little bit? Yeah. Is that you being an artist, or is that you procrastinating a little, or like what's going on there?
It's the art. I'm very detail oriented.
Okay.
And I even remember at one point after we opened, someone relatively close to me came in and, I was kind of like finessing over the food. We call it the food Insta ready, like Instagram ready.
Yeah.
And so, I was doing that Insta ready thing and he looked at me and he's like, just so you know, you're never going to be able to keep up with that kind of level of detail. And it kind of broke my heart a little bit, right? Because you as someone that's put a lot of risk into starting a business and you have a vision and you want it to be just perfect all the time, that's always been a challenge for me.
Is perfect the enemy of good enough very good?
So my therapist says yes. I was told that, it's not right. You have to understand when the difference is it perfect or good enough? Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm constantly struggling with that.
To be honest with you, I don't know if I've ever even talked about this on the podcast, but so I deal with clients. I help clients bring sauces to market.
Yeah.
And I feel bad even talking about this, but it's honest. But I a lot of times I tell them, we just need to get you somewhere between 95 and 99%. Because 100% is not possible.
No.
Yeah.
No, we just started kind of a new thing here. Like, I'm all about little taglines and motivating the chefs here and getting everyone on board. And one of my newest ones, and these are things at 3 a.m., you're like, oh, my God. So our new one is, and I'm running around screaming it to everyone, pull the trigger, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just got to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Like, you can't keep,
they'll tweak to death.
I can create 100 variations of something, but you just got to pull the trigger.
Yeah, I don't mean to pull it back to what I'm doing, but what will happen then is they'll get it to that 97, 98%, then they'll take it home, and the aunt will try it, the uncle will try it,
right?
Grandma tries it, and everybody's got an opinion, and you will do that forever.
Forever.
Pull the trigger.
Pull the
you
trigger.
Said it. Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So back to early OpenFace days. So the guy that came in there and said, hey, you can't sustain this, I guess speed is what he said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was he right or was he wrong? What do you think?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it depends on the day, right?
Yeah.
I still think that I'm still as particular as I was. I didn't really, I found ways to make speedier improvements and to maybe expedite things a little bit faster. But I'm never going to lose that. That's what, I mean, I think about all the restaurants that have come and gone, and I'm now in 20 years of this, in this variation, one form or another. And I think that says something. Something has to be working a little bit.
Of course. Yes, absolutely. Let's talk about leadership for a second, though.
Yeah.
You want everything to be perfect. You're not back there. I mean, as we speak right now, sandwiches are being made, and
they are. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
How do you manage that urge inside of yourself to have an opinion when you think it could have been 1% better, but not be the asshole micromanager?
Oh, yeah.
Like, how hard is that? That's hard, isn't it?
It is really hard. Yeah. I think it's about, you know, it's all in the upfront training, right? And setting expectations. Mm-hmm. And so all the folks that I bring on, we have a pretty extensive like training process. And part of the business structure that I have over this 20 years, if we have books and binders, right? We are like probably 90% acting like a franchise. Like, and that was actually one of the reasons why I wanted to come try here, because I wanted to know how easy it was to duplicate something that I'd done at a different location.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always thinking about duplication. We're always thinking about, you know, how can the next person that has to learn this, how easily can they learn it?
Mm-hmm.
And so the chefs all have a lot of resources that makes it so that I don't have to be over top of them and micromanaging them. That's not what I want to do. That's not what I want my job to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I want them to have as much freedom, you know, as possible.
Do you have like, you get procedures back there? Do you have like pictures? Like, I remember in college, I worked at this sub shop,
yeah,
and the owner put pictures of it should look like this.
We have illustrations.
Okay.
So
yeah,
because I, you know, because I was in graphic arts.
Yeah.
So yeah. So like I have little illustrations that shows like the layering of the sandwiches.
Yeah.
We have things like different names for different types of forms that we use that help the chefs build out, like, you know, the sandwich builds and do different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, like, so original open face.
Yeah.
I'm moving around a little.
No worries.
Original open face, the concept, I'm going to do open face sandwiches, and I think you were doing closed face too. You had just all kinds of sandwiches.
So what kind of got us to open face was I was obsessed with chutneys. The restaurant was going to be called Chutneys, and it was going to be all about just different types of like saucy, like fun chutney stuff on top of sandwiches, which made most sense that they would be open.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to realize that chutney seemed a little bit too narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid that folks might think, you know, it just wouldn't give us enough like direction. And so that's how we ended up with open face. And then it's just fun to be like, you know, open face. It just has a lot of different kind of things going on with it that felt right for the business.
It's very memorable. You know, I remember, yeah, the first time I ever heard it, I always remembered it. It was never, where are you talking about? It was,
yeah,
always, oh, yeah, the place in the Southwest. Yeah,
yeah,
of,
yeah,
course. Yeah.
I mean, most of the time they call us Pen Face, so that makes it even more fun, right? Because they're like, what is Pen Face? I'm like, there is a giant O about it.
Okay. When you opened, was it gangbusters right off the bat, crickets right off the bat, somewhere in between?
You know, the South Wedge at that time, everyone was super excited, and obviously we, like I said, we had the space for years, so the people were bugging me, like, and I lived there, you know, I have a house in the South Wedge, so people knew that, you know, I was floating around, and I also had a business partner at the time, and we were doing this everything, and yeah, it was a little slow, but it picked up pretty fast. And we quickly, what happened was, is we latched on to U of R and Strong, which I will forever be thankful for those organizations. Without them and the support that we got from them and the catering and all the departments that we used to work with, we would not have made it.
Where did that connection come from?
I think a lot of word of mouth, and then just, you know, we were down the street, so easy delivery, right? They were supporting someone local in the neighborhood. But we were doing like 200, 300, 400 box lunches that were going up sometimes for some of their big events, and their meetings and stuff. And so I think that people don't realize the South Wedge, the struggle with that area, and I think it's still, you know, the same today, is it just doesn't have the walking traffic that like Park Avenue does.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to really survive there for any length of time, you have to find the business elsewhere. And whether that's selling online or, again, like how we did catering, like outside of the neighborhood, that was really the key for us.
The relationship, the catering relationship with the Strong is, that was obviously key and like probably floated you at times, put you over the top at times.
Yep.
Somebody just told me an exercise that I still need to do myself, but I thought it was interesting, and it's the reason I asked you where did that relationship come from, was I'm trying to figure out where to spend my time and what do I need to say no to, what do I need to be saying yes to.
Yeah.
And somebody said, take your client list and trace it all back to the origin story, where the relationship came from, and that will tell you the story of where your business is actually coming from. Where should you be spending your time?
Yeah.
I had never thought of that
before.
That's
amazing. Yeah,
I thought it was really good.
That's
exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. So you do Open Face. You're in South Wedge. Open Face, and eventually now you built this thing. You have this great reputation.
Yeah,
it's going well.
Yeah.
When does it actually end? And like, when do you see it coming to an end? I mean,
You know, my business partner wanted out, and so then I kind of took over, and I think I had it for maybe 2-3 years that it was just kind of me, and it was difficult, right? Mm-hmm. It was 24/7, 365, and you know, you just can't, you know, I'm bringing it home every day, having no life, I just no time for anything else other than Open Face, and trying to grow. And just like Danielle was saying, like, I have all these great ideas, right? I want to do wholesale things. I want to package things. I want to and there just wasn't any room for growth anymore. And so I burnt out really quickly at the tail end. And then I had a friend who was looking for a space. And so we made that, you know, I was like, okay, that's great. You need a space and I want out. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really hard decision. I didn't really announce that it was going to happen until like 3 days before it happened. And that, you know, that came under, you know, like I was obviously working with attorneys and stuff and figuring out how to kind of dissolve things. And they were like, don't tell anyone. And that's my biggest regret about closing the business is I didn't really, that last weekend, it kind of like pulled the rug out from under everyone's feet. And that felt wrong to me.
Yeah.
Like having been in the South Wedge for so long and everyone was like, what? You're closing?
Yeah.
So
what was the purpose of the legal advice to not tell them?
They were afraid that there would be damage to the business. That like, if you tell people too soon, you'll have no business, and then you won't be able to pay the rent those last few months or for however long it is, which I could see that, but I kind of think it would have worked the opposite way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It feels like bad advice to me now.
Yeah.
I
mean,
about it.
There occasionally when a restaurant does announce it's closing, like look at Poutine a couple of months ago.
I know. Right.
I had her on the podcast right after they closed, and she talked, it was like the best month they ever had after.
Well, and even me, my last day, I have the tickets at home stabbed on this little stabby thing.
Yeah.
And they're mostly faded out now, but those tickets from that day when we closed were like unreal.
Okay. The moment you, not the moment you closed, but the moment you decided to close, where you knew in your head it was no longer I wonder if I should, it's I am closing. What happens to all that stress? Does it go away? Does it feel like a million pounds off of you? Does it add stress? Because now I'm closing, and what are people going to think? What happens?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. It was not easy. There was something about it that did not feel right to me, but I didn't know how to solve it. I had been at that point, I had hired some even more expensive folks who I thought could help, you know, navigate the business, and it just kind of wasn't, things weren't coming together. So it felt like I didn't know where else to go or what else to do. You're just swapping one stress from it for another, to be honest with you. Then it became the stress of free falling.
Yeah.
There was no real game plan. There was no like, oh, and obviously, you know, the restaurant interest, I'm not retiring with a big pile of money that I'm going to be like, oh, now I'm going to go do this fun thing that I've always wanted to do.
I'm sorry, you're a business owner. You're rich, right?
That's exactly what they always think.
Yeah.
I've got a house in Malibu that I go to.
Yes. I talk about that on here a lot, actually. Like, it's one thing that I understand nobody's ever going to feel bad for the boss. No one's ever going to feel bad for the owner.
Right.
But it is unfair the general public tends to think all business owners are rich. It is not
It is true. Not true. No. I'm going to tell you right now, it is not true.
Yeah. What about the day, so I asked you about when you made the decision. What about the day after you actually have closed? You don't have to go to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Does the stress go away at that point, or like what happened?
It did. Well, I was super excited for my friend, right? Because now he had a space. Mm-hmm. And obviously we were in contact, and I was like, this is great for him. And watching him, it felt like I had like passed the baton a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I was always kind of like, we were checking in, like, how's it going? Like, what are you up to? And watching him kind of get ready to do that felt really great, right? So that felt like a good moment for me. And then once I kind of got past the like initial, like, well, now how are you going to pay for your bills, right? Like, yeah. Where are you going to get the mortgage money? I just started to kind of like play around with some different things. I have a buddy who has a real estate company. I got my real estate license.
Nice.
Like everyone does.
How'd you like that?
Hated it.
Did you sell any houses?
I had two houses, but I didn't have to do any work, right? I had two friends that had already found their house, so they just needed the buyer's agent, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I can help you through the paperwork. So I basically helped them through the paperwork. And I learned, and it was great, and it was a fantastic experience. But it just didn't feel really good for me. And then I had another friend who's like had a contract business, and he's like, well, let's come install cabinets for a while and do trim work. And so I did that a little bit.
Do you like that, or?
You know, I do love doing trim. Like, it's kind of meticulous, and I just sitting there doing trim all day is kind of fun.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel rewarding.
Not face-to-face with the public in that case.
Yeah, and that those kind of things were nice, right? Uh-huh. It's like, you know, to have some kind of like time to decompress and not be, you know,
in
the public space, so.
Hey, this is Wade Reed with the Level Up Podcast. How do you take your coffee? What's your favorite espresso drink? Do you prefer washed process or natural process coffees? If any of these questions interest you, tune in to the Level Up Podcast presented by Nominate Meals on the Lunchador Podcast Network. We're looking at every link in the coffee supply chain, from growing and processing to cafe life and home coffee brewing, to find the topics that will enrich and maybe even stretch your experience of coffee. So have a listen, check us out on Instagram and Substack, and as always, enjoy your coffee.
Welcome to Behind the Studio Door, where we dig into the vibrant creative landscape of Rochester, New York. Hi, I'm Molly Darling, and along with my co-host Christian Rivera and our fabulous producer Chris Lindstrom, it's my pleasure to guide you through the dynamic world of our local creative professionals. Each episode offers a unique glimpse into the studios of those who enrich our Rochester community with their artistic vision. Join us as we explore the diversity and talent in Rochester, revealing the compelling narratives and creative journeys that exist just beyond the studio door.
At that time, the idea in the back of your head, is Open Face ever going to come back? Or is, hey, you know what, that was a great time in my life, I'll probably never do that again.
At that point, what was happening was people thought I was coming out with a cookbook.
Hmm.
So there had been talk that I was going to do a cookbook, and I had started researching doing cookbooks. And so even on my social media, I was still trying to engage with them and let them know that I was still around, things were still happening. And I had started to look into that. I hadn't given up on Open Face yet. I just didn't know where it was going to go. So, but it did kind of like hang out for a bit.
In the middle of this, of the hiatus, COVID happens, right?
Yeah. So I ended up so weirdly enough, the way it all happened is COVID happened, and then I got a job at Rochester Regional, and what they were calling a COVID relief position. Mm-hmm. So they were losing a lot of employees because that was where the first known case of COVID had happened and someone had passed. So they were hiring for people to help kind of come out and sanitize and run these giant sanitizing machines. There's a much fancier name for it, I'm sorry. But So basically it was this giant, it looked like a bug zapper, like, you know, old timey blue light thing. So I took that position, went out there, and I was zapping rooms during COVID, and just trying to do, I wanted to do something. I don't know. I think at that point I wasn't, for some reason, I wasn't the one of the people that was scared of it. I ran towards it.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to work in a hospital during that year? That must have been.
Oh man, crazy. It was rough.
Yeah.
It was the things it was terrible. I mean, you know, I would go to rooms and they'd be like, you can't do it yet because we have to clear the personnel, right? There was just, it was just rough.
What did you have to wear? Were you the full hazmat?
The whole thing.
Yeah.
All the stuff, all the PP, is that what they, I think that's the official name, like the mask, the, all the suits, like just everything, you know. And
so you were going into a it's not a great word to use, but like a soiled room. Like you were going into a room and your job was to turn it over. Yep. And that's a, that right in the middle of when everyone's telling you, oh, this thing's going to kill you. And you're just walking in going like, all right,
I'll go clean it. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's ballsy, bro.
That was it. It was pretty rough.
Did you get it at any point in there?
No.
No, okay.
It was, yeah, I, you know, but, it, you know, and then it turned quickly into then they were like, oh, you're kind of good at this. And then, like, you should move. We want to move you to the emergency room. So then they moved me to the emergency room, which was like a whole nother lifestyle, right? I never worked in healthcare. I knew nothing about it. And now I'm in, like, with the adrenaline junkie, like, doctors and nurses who are always hyped up, like, always things going on. And I'm trying to flip rooms in the middle of total chaos. And it just is everything you can imagine the from TV. It just was insane. But
I don't mean to belabor the point, but like you didn't have any paranoia walking into a room where the theory was like, it's everywhere. COVID is everywhere in this room.
Well, remember, you I technically just lost my business. So there wasn't like much.
Like, fuck it.
So I was like, I'm just going in.
Okay, so opening open face then at Eastman, like what's the first phone call? What's the light bulb moment? Who calls who? How does it?
I was at the hospital. I was doing an emergency room shift. So, and I was, it was like B shift too. So it's like that late shift. So my lunch was like at 6:30 in the evening or whatever they do. I was sitting there in the break room. My phone chimed, the email chimed, the little ding. And I'm like, it's George Eastman Museum. I'm like, interesting. And Bruce Barnes, the director here, had sent me a message, somehow found my email or somehow figured it out from someone, and kind of just checked in and said that they were working on the new Tom Tischer Visitor Center and they were looking for an eatery for it and was wondering what I was doing.
And how did you feel?
I'm seriously going to cry right now. I mean, I cried.
It had to be so exhilarating.
It felt like, you know.
You're back, baby.
You know, all those years of things that you had done and all the times and the stuff that you had given up, you're like, it's like a second chance, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is a second chance to see, like, maybe it wasn't done and maybe there's still something here.
Yep. Had he been a customer or, like, how did he know?
Yeah, so he and his husband had been into Open Face over there. And so, yeah, they just were kind of, like, poking around and kind of see what might work here. And so I came over here and we did the tour, and most of it, you know, they were just kind of getting things in place. I don't even think the kitchen was completely in yet. I had multiple meetings with folks, and we talked about, you know, what my vision was and what their vision was and where we wanted to go and kind of, like, figure that out.
How long between that email and I quit, motherfuckers?
Yeah, I know, right?
Excuse my language.
You're good. I usually drop the F-bomb a lot. I didn't know that was allowed here.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. I don't remember how. It wasn't much longer because that was probably what happened is I had a camping trip already planned, and I had to then, no joke, take my laptop and in a tent in Hamlin Beach work with my attorney to, like, put together the documents camping to be like, okay, this is what it's going to be. This is what we're going to do. And that was probably July, August. And then we opened here in October.
Pretty fast. Yeah.
It was pretty fast.
How, those initial meetings about, here's what I'm thinking, here's what you're thinking. I mean, obviously you went with your concept, right? So were they pretty great?
It's kind of like they already had the space done. So the vibe is a little bit different than the original kind of like idea. You know, the original open phase was heavy on kind of like,
It was a little hipster, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was hipstery. And I tried to bring a lot of like Americana, like hipstery Americana kind of thing going on. It had a vibe.
It was very cool.
Yeah.
It was like very, very cool.
It was.
I felt like I wasn't cool enough to be there, but I felt like I was. I did feel welcome there.
Okay,
I don't
good.
Want that to not sound like I didn't feel welcome. It's not like I didn't feel welcome.
Yeah.
But I felt like that these are the cool kids, you know?
Well, I mean, and yeah, we were playing like illegal soundtracks, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then those soundtracks were dropped. You know, literally, you'd be lunching, and the F bomb would be drinking over the thing, and like, you know, the musical company would always be sending hate mail and be like, "We know you're playing illegal music there. Stop doing it." And we're like, "No, man, we're doing it." So yeah, there was definitely a vibe. So you know, here they knew they had a vision for the space, which it's a beautiful space. It's very open. They incorporated the Palm House, which is like fantastic eating, mm-hmm. best view to have lunch in Rochester all seasons, every season. We went through and we worked our little open face magic where we could. We're continuing to do that. We're actually doing a rebrand right now.
Oh.
So the new version of the logo coming out. We've got new bandanas coming out. We've got, you know, new graphics.
The logo I'm seeing, is that new or is it?
That is the old one.
That's the old one.
Yeah,
okay.
So
new one is not public yet?
We've started to dabble. Okay. So there's it's the one that's on the actually outside on the A-frames, the square logo. But we're doing a little bit of an update, so that feels fun, trying to bring in a little bit more of the vibe. We're working on doing a museum case of Moxie memorabilia, because that was a big thing over there, and we just didn't have that. So I've asked the museum if we can use one of their display cases, and we'll actually have a Moxie-like thing going on.
That's awesome.
So again, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. What about this menu compared to the old menu? Is it what is identical? What is new and improved? Like, what's different?
Yeah, we went through, obviously corn mash is still corn mash. It will always be our signature sandwich. It's the sandwich almost everyone always gets.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, it's, you know, that, the ginger carrots, pickled beets, those things all stayed the same. Some of the sandwiches got upgraded. We got into more toasted hot things. So some of the cold sandwiches, like the brie used to be a cold sandwich, the goat used to be a cold sandwich. Those are all melts now. So they're melted and cheesy and delicious. They got new toppings. We're doing a full special board menu now. So usually three sandwich specials running, three special sides. We're doing phosphate sodas now. We're making all our, you know, we're blending teas. We're doing a lot of like new fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What percentage of the butts and seats here are museum goers versus people just walking in from the outside?
It's probably still about 60-40. 60 museum, 40 open facers. It's amazing to me. Even I just was out last week and someone was like, "I sure do miss open face on South Avenue." And I'm like, "Well, you know it's open, right?" Mm-hmm. It is. So there's still after five, because COVID, right? We opened right in the thick of COVID.
Yeah.
And it's been kind of like a hard, you know, we're just, you know, I'm working, like I said, with Danielle a lot right now and Eliza's team. And we're really trying to, that's the communication folks here at the museum, to get the word out that Open Face is open again.
Not only that it's open also, but I think that maybe the one small thing that I just wish more people knew, and that's what we're doing here, is you can just walk in here and eat at Open Face.
Just walk in.
You don't have to buy an admission to the museum.
That is correct. And you're absolutely right. A lot of people think there is that misconception. But that was the idea, I think, that Bruce had, is he always knew, whether it was Open Face or whatever, he always knew he wanted this to be a destination location, like eatery. So this would be someplace, just like Brown Howl, and you can go in, you can eat, and not actually pay admission.
So let me ask the question I asked Danielle. Two things right now that are going great that you are just like, we are on fire on these two things, and then the one thing keeping you up at night right now.
Oh gosh. I mean, I definitely agree with hers for sure. The two things that are going great, I hired a official baker. So right out of like culinary, his first job ever.
Nice.
And he is getting ready to take lead on our cookie wholesale program.
Yes.
So we are working our asses off to get Open Face cookies out into other places here in Rochester.
Redbird Market and Fairport will take it.
Boom.
That's my wife's place.
Fantastic.
She'll take it. You're done. You got into one store.
Okay, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So we are getting ready to do that. I'm hoping in 6 months we'll have that all buttoned up. We're pretty close.
You going to make them here or you need a co-pack?
Yeah, we're probably going to here for a while.
Okay, cool.
The... The other one that I'm still, you know, trying to work on is, you know, is getting those ginger carrots co-packed. And weirdly enough, I don't know if you know, I still have an email from you from 2020.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Where I was getting ready to sign the NDA so that we could have a conversation about that.
About the ginger carrots?
Yeah.
I do, so actually. Yes, this, I do.
But it was 2020, so a lot had happened and a lot of things had changed. And so I kind of had to, like, pivot yet again. And so it's been kind of on pause. But
if you do end up looking for a packer on the cookies, Special Touch Bakery,
oh, nice,
which has a really good message. I don't know if you're familiar with them
or not.
They do pies, and they do cookies, and they don't have minimums, which is really nice.
Fantastic, yeah.
Ginger carrots, that's...
It's tough.
Tougher.
It is.
You know who I bet would definitely mess with that? Ryan from Sweet Pea. I bet would mess with
interesting.
That.
Interesting.
He's getting into a little bit of co-packing, and he's doing kind of specialty, kind of up for anything right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so those are a couple potential leads. And then as far as the cookies go, too, there's Lanovera Specialty Foods on Mushroom Boulevard in Henrietta.
Yeah, okay.
That also has a commercial bakery that does co-packing for cookies and things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got that going on. I mean, the other part that's going really well right here are the chefs that I have here. Everyone on this team is the best team that's ever been part of Open Face. They're all like firing it all the time. They're like just killing it right now.
Yeah.
We just have so much momentum, and that feels really good in a time where, you know, things are just still so uncertain for food.
Yeah.
And that's the part that keeps me up at night. The food industry is fucked. I'm just going to say that.
Let's dive in.
Yeah,
tell me.
I mean, it is just a mess right now.
Break it down for me. What's going so wrong?
It's just, you know, I'm having so much difficulty getting, like, some of our standard things. They keep changing things. Distribution is still messed up. The swinging of prices. Like, what people don't understand is that, you know, when you're selling a commodity item, like, it's just very difficult. And you're trying to maintain a set menu price, right? Mm-hmm. It's different for fancy restaurants who they come out, they print a menu every day, and they can really quick pivot.
MP. Market price.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, MP.
But when you're trying to do what we do in a consistent manner, it makes it really, really, really hard.
Whoops your ass, right? Like you got a $15 sandwich or whatever, and then all of a sudden the main ingredient comes in and it's, the cost has gone
up.
Like, it just killed your margin on it, and that's how you're making your money. And
I mean, we had to actually ditch turkey because, you know, we used to have turkey on the menu, and I couldn't handle it. It would go, the swing would be so much that I would literally be paying people to eat that sandwich. Mm-hmm. And so we had to move to chicken, and, you know, we do, you know, brine and we roast and we slice all our chicken here in house and do all that fancy stuff. But it's just, it's frustrating that, you know, that it adds labor costs and stuff that, you know, when it was just easier to get the whole turkeys and just do them and be done with it.
I don't think so. You get it. I don't think you can quite articulate how much it takes the wind out of your sails when you do the math on something and realize, we didn't make any money. Not only did we not make any money, we might have actually just lost money on every single person that ordered it.
And that was me in the very beginning, too. Like, when you first are in the food business, and especially, like, I'm the kind of guy who's like, I don't want to be charging too much, right? Mm-hmm. And I literally have, just to give you an idea where we've been, when we opened in 2004, there are sandwiches that are on that menu right now that in 2004 I was selling for $4.95 with a side. And today, those same sandwiches are on the menu for $13.95 on that side.
Wow.
Like, it's just, like, you can't, you know, there's, and I always also try to remind people, I have a great story when people give me a hard time about food being expensive. I'm like, let's talk about the chicken and how many times the chicken's been touched. Mm-hmm. Not in a weird way, but literally, it's like, that chicken had to be born somewhere. It had to be raised somewhere. It had to be processed somewhere. It had to be then shipped. It had to a company that then somehow had to, like, package and do things with it. It had to go on shelves and this and that by employees. And then I had to go in and I had to pull it. I had to get here. My people had to unpack it. We had to, like, make the brine. We had to, like, do all this stuff. And then we have to, like, cook it. And then we have to slice it. Like, that chicken got touched like 50 times. That's why it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. Like, all those people have to make a living, and that's what people don't understand. This is not like making a sandwich in your home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
What is the fix? How does it eventually get fixed? Is there any realistic any real chance that food costs are going to ever come down.
No.
I agree.
No. There's no, no, it's, people have to understand that going out to eat now is a luxury item, unfortunately. It's not a given that you can afford to go out to eat. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege. And it's, that's just, and people need to get back to, unfortunately, the ways of, you know, you've got to make more meals at home. And I think that's been the problem, is people don't really enjoy spending time in their own kitchens anymore. And they got kind of out of the habit of that. And I think that that's what it needs to, that eventually we'll go back to.
So you think it's going to continue to push to people are just going to have to relearn how to make food at home and
relearn that. And they're also, I mean, what we've noticed here is there's a lot more splitting going on, right? Mm. They're buying one thing and they want to have the experience of coming out, which is great. It's still a fun experience and you still get to sample our food. And we do offer something here, the sandwich tasting, where you can get two halves. So it makes it even easier for splitting. And not, you know, not that splitting is great for us as a business, but it does at least allow us to showcase still what we do and they get to try it. And yeah. So there's been a lot more of that too. And I noticed that even in my friends and family, like, right, they go out and they're like, let's just eat at the bar. Let's order an app and a drink, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm, you know.
Do you have a lifetime membership to the museum right now?
kind of, yeah.
You could go in anytime you want.
Yeah, I mean, good.
Nice little perk.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and we got, you know, we can, technically as museum workers, we can go to any museum in the world for free.
Really? I never knew that.
Yeah, it's like a,
that's like a
maybe
network.
I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say that on
that's
there.
A thing.
But that's like a thing. Yeah, cool. I can just show my badge and be like, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a, what is like an association of museums or something?
I guess it's like a thing. I don't travel much, so and I haven't actually had to been somewhere where I've got to. To try it, but yeah, I think it's a legit thing.
Bro, I wouldn't say it too loud because I think people in charge now will take that shit away.
I know, right?
All the way. Yeah, I don't know if you know what I'm trying to say or not. Let's keep it a secret.
Yeah,
let's keep it
on
a secret.
DL.
That's got to be something. If you know, you know. All right. Well, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Did I miss anything? What did we talk about?
I don't think so. No.
How's personal life? You got family? What's going on?
No family left here in town. So everyone headed south. You know.
How far south?
I still got people in Ohio, South Carolina, Florida, nice. Vegas.
Oh,
I got a brother in Vegas.
To go visit. That's nice. All right.
I got to go out there and check out the Sphere for the week it opened.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
How is it?
It's pretty amazing.
Did you go all the way up top? Is it fucking hard to be up top?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, it's a little disorienting in there.
The videos look like I would feel like I was going to fall off a cliff. Yeah. I don't know what it...
I mean, literally, we finished up the show and came out, and the girl puked in the lobby, one that was in the row. So it can be pretty...
Did you experience any of that? Was it like, did it make you
Not conscious? For me, no.
Who did you see there?
They're doing a movie there at that time. Yeah,
that has to be kind of cool. It's all around.
I would love to see a show though. I would have loved to see you two there, but Kenny Chesney's going to be out there. I'm hoping to get out there to see him. So I think it'll be a fun show.
You probably got to get to work, right?
You know, always.
Yeah,
always.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank
man.
You.
Best
for
of luck to
me.
You. Congratulations on everything. You're
and
a great dude.
Same to you.
I don't know if I deserve it. You know?
Oh, like, come on.
No,
yeah.
I don't know. I've basically like.
You're everywhere. So
well,
this
I don't
is
know.
Great.
There's a lot of people who are in charge of making sure I don't crash the whole fucking thing. You know what I mean? And I'm lucky for those people. I'm grateful.
I need
them.
More of those people in my life. So if you have any extras, send
right.
them my way.
Great. Thank you, Jared.
Yes, thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.